How's it, everyone? Welcome to Aloha and Mine. And today is a very special episode. We have our very first guest, Dr. Iwamoto from Chaminade. And today he's going to inform us about anxiety and how to know what it is, handle it, so we can have our best brain and live our best life. Aloha and Mine is now. So remember that Aloha and Mine is choosing love and aloha, and it's proven winning for our bodies, minds, and soul. Win, win, winning. It's mental health aloha style. So without further ado, Dr. Iwamoto, tell us a little bit about yourself.
So hi, my name is Darren Iwamoto. I am a professor of psychology at Chaminade University. I'm also a licensed mental health counselor, and I also have a small little practice that I still do on the side.
Awesome, awesome. So, Dr. Iwamoto, what I like to do in my classes with my high school students, and I'm trying to do here on Aloha in Mind, is part of mindfulness is promoting gratitude. And even if it's the first thing in the day, last thing in the day, so for us right now as we're recording, it's kind of early, 9 o'clock in the morning. So I want to ask you, what has been the best part of your day so far?
Let's see. I was able to take my daughter to practice, and we had a nice conversation in the car. And also the drive out toward the windward side was actually also something I was really grateful for, because it's very peaceful and the scenery is just beautiful.
Really is, really is. Were you coming from town?
Yes.
Nice. Yeah, I love driving down the Poly. So, audience, just a reminder that mindfulness means free from having your mind free from distractions, physical, mental distractions, and being present in the moment. Being present in the moment with people, your friends, family, community, being present with yourself. So again, we do this podcast to inform you about mindfulness, ways to practice mindfulness to live your best life. As we always say, best brain, best life. So let's just dive right into it, Dr. Iwamoto. You are in the behavioral science department. Mm-hmm. How did you get into that? Maybe first explain what it is for those of us who don't know what it is.
So our School of Education and Behavioral Sciences is actually a quite large college now at the university. So right now, we currently have undergraduate psychology. We also have minors in anthropology and sociology. When we get to the master's level, we have our master's in counseling and psychology, counseling psychology. And that one actually has tracks in school counseling, marriage and family therapy, and mental health counseling. And then we have an advanced graduate degree, which is in a educational specialist degree in school psychology, which will open in October of 23, so right around the corner. We also have one of the best programs in the state, which is the doctorate in psychology and clinical psychology. We also have a doctorate in education, in educational psychology, as well as a doctorate in marriage and family therapy. So we have a lot of the support, I would say the student support type of degrees that the Department of Education is currently looking for, but we're able to kind of provide that service to the state.
So basically, you have all the essential people we really need, right, to live like a good, healthy mental life.
Yes.
Awesome. So what prompted you to get into this topic of anxiety? Because I know when I met you, well, I didn't meet you directly, but when I first saw you at my PD, you said, okay, today we're going to focus on anxiety and how to cope with it. So what kind of made you deep dive into that topic specifically?
So I was one of those that didn't transition well from high school to college. And to this day, I actually don't understand exactly why that was. Mm-hmm. There wasn't anything really big that happened. I was at Mid-Pacific Institute, but then I ended up going to University of Hawaii at Manoa. And so the transition wasn't, to me, that big. But for some reason, my body reacted weird. Mm. So I suffered from anxiety when I was in that transition, actually probably even through high school. And again, to this day, I still don't really understand why. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to figure out why that's the case. And so I didn't know how to figure that out. So I was kind of drudging along. And then when I learned about the field of psychology, then things began to kind of make sense. So I began to learn more about human behavior. Like, why do people do what they do and think what they think? And then it was really only relatively recently, which is actually kind of sad when I think about it, that I begin to understand neuroscience. And so I'm no expert in that, but I know enough at a very superficial level that really makes me, it helps me understand how the brain works, how hormones work, how neurotransmitters work. And it began to, I realized that you can, you have a lot more control over your body. And so the whole mind-body connection is real. And that is what really helped me. And that has been kind of like the catalyst for me to pursue this, do research, as well as to provide support to others through my practice.
I love that. Last or a few episodes ago, we were talking about how, you know, you're in the airplane and they say, put your mask on first, your oxygen mask, before you try and help someone. And I think that's part of the reason why we're doing this, right? We have to help ourselves first before we can help our children, before we can help our students. And yeah, I can connect to that, because the reason why I've gone to mindfulness, it's like, you know, I feel stressed all the time, to be honest. And once you deep dive into it and you see how it works, and that you said it perfectly, like, we have control over it. We just have to know how to control it and strategies for controlling it. So, yeah, I totally agree. So here's a good question. I know you posed this question at our educator PD, and I really didn't know how to answer it. What is the difference between stress and the anxiety?
So I think the easiest way to kind of think about it is stress is your physical and or emotional, mental reaction to some type of event or situation that you perceive is currently happening. Okay. So a lot of times we're stressed over deadlines that are coming, or pressure that we're getting from work, or something that's actually happening, or an event that's here or coming. So it's something a little bit more tangible. Mm-hmm. Anxiety is actually concern about the future. So it's when our mind goes into the future, there's no, it's almost as though we're trying to create these predictions of events that are coming. So anxiety is really about fear or worry about something impending that may or may not happen. So one of the challenges that I've seen is that our brain, ironically, is not that smart in that sense that our brain cannot decipher the difference between what is real and what is imagined. Mm-hmm. So I think this podcast is amazing because mindfulness is really the key, because the only time that we're ever truly in control and that we're truly safe is in the present. And so us being able to control our ability to stay and remain in a place where we are able to dictate what we can and cannot do and control our behavior, our perceptions, is all really in the now. And so if we stay too much into the future or into the past, then it becomes really dangerous because we don't have control over the past or our future. Mm-hmm. And that's really is the key difference.
Wow, you said that perfectly. I wish I could take snippets of that and like put it on the wall. That is like really great life advice. Being in the present, that's all we can do, right? I really like that. So we've done on this podcast basic brain anatomy. We've covered the lizard part of your brain, the mammalian part, and the human part. So we broke it down very simply. So now, audience, we have an expert here. Why is it important for people just to know the basics of brain anatomy?
You know, ironically, it's because it really does explain why do we do what we do and think what we think. And so I think one of the challenges is that our brain develops basically from the brainstem, and it develops going up and going out. Mm-hmm. And so really the next part of the brain that matures the fastest is what is known as the mammalian brain, or our limbic system, which is our emotions. It's our flight or fight system. Mm-hmm. It's how we survive as human beings over the years through our ancestors. And the irony is that that part of the brain is pretty functional by the age of 3, and it's fully functional by about the age of 12, 13 years old.
Okay.
What that means is that older means stronger. And so when you're looking at how the brain develops, you'll find that our flight or fight system, our impulsivity, our emotional reactions to things, our angers, all those kinds of things are the strongest part of us until our brain fully develops, which is around 25.
Wow.
So when we're looking at, for example, adolescent behavior, it doesn't take much to trigger an adolescent, primarily because it's really the flight or fight or your impulsive part of your brain is the most dominant part of your brain at that time.
I see. And so
your, I think what you referenced as the human brain or the neomammalian brain, the neocortex, that's what makes us, you know, humans, and what makes us really the most dominant species on Earth is the fact that that's what controls our emotional regulation. It controls our impulsivity. It kind of keeps us in check. And that becomes, it really doesn't fully develop until about 25. And so when you begin to think, you know, why do our children throw tantrums and cry and all that? It's really because we need to be able to calm them down, to be able to have our kind of our logic kick back in. So one of the things that I always tell my students is that if you want to be a great friend or parent, is really is understanding the person that you're talking to is really is like, what brain are they talking from?
And that's a great idea.
So yes, we only have one brain, but looking, it's just easier to think of it as like three different kinds of brains. But the if someone is coming and talking to you with emotions, then it really doesn't help them to come back to them with logic, because really it's our emotions. It really does. It actually does shut down the logic part of your brain, which is the prefrontal cortex. And on the flip side, when you're thinking very logical, you're not actually very emotional. So best example
that is true.
So, I mean, it's interesting how that works, but it's just through evolution that our brain does that, because our ancestors survived because they went into flight or fight in order to survive. And if they pondered that thought and wondered what they would do, which is logic,
exactly,
then they didn't survive. And so ultimately that ended up becoming part of, you know, survival of the fittest. But that's how our brain still works. And so I think what helps a lot of people is our ability to calm down, and when we calm down, then our logic can kick back in. And so it's really about, you know, like if someone's emotional, then it's really important to acknowledge their feelings and let them be heard and let them calm down. And then after that, then the teaching moments kick in. And on the other side, it's when someone's, you know, logical, then that's when problem solving comes and teaching moments can happen. So that's why it's important to kind of understand how the brain works, because it really does explain why people do what they do and think what they think.
Yeah, I like that. So if we, so if I have a student in a class, teenagers or my young son, and, you know, I teach at a all-girls school, so sometimes emotions are very high. What I try and do, maybe you can tell me a better practice, is, you know, instead of saying like, oh, what's wrong, blah, 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 say, I understand that you're upset, or, you know, something's bothering you. Do you want to talk about it? And then if they say, no, I don't want to talk about it, then I'll offer them, do you want to go take a walk in the hallway? Or for my son, maybe you want to go out, sit outside for a moment. Like, is there other ways to kind of approach someone when they're highly emotional, especially like teenagers and kids?
So when they're highly emotional, what helps is really, it comes down to letting them calm down. So one of the, I actually just learned this, and it makes total sense because it was something that I was always kind of baffled by. But your emotions come from your limbic system, which we talked about. But your ability to speak actually comes from your, what you referenced as the human brain, or
your
neocortex. And why that's, why that to me made a great impact in the way I see things is because you need to be logical to be able to speak.
Oh, so yes, you're so right.
one of the things that I learned, one of the techniques in helping with anxiety, for example, is being able to explain why you're feeling anxious. So if you recognize that you're anxious, then you tell, you ask, you basically tell yourself, I am feeling anxious because of, and then whatever that is. It should be short. But being able to label something being able to articulate that actually requires your logic part of your brain to be able to work.
That is so true.
So that creates a pause, which a lot of times then allows us to kind of calm down, or calm us down, and then we'll be able to kind of process what works. So when your scenario or your situation with students, for example, is very similarly, is if they're really highly emotional, there are many cases where they're not going to be able to find the words.
That makes sense now.
So I think the most important thing is to make sure that they're safe, make sure that they're in a safe environment, allow them time to be able to kind of decompress and calm down. So safe spaces in classrooms work. I'm not sure if people are allowed to allow the students to leave and to walk, but you know, in practice, is walking really does help. It clears our mind. It makes us relax. And when the child then begins to kind of settle down and calm down, then they're actually listening. And then at that point, then the teaching moments can kick in. So it's really about keeping them safe, making sure that they're able to calm themselves down or be able to help them calm down. And then when that point comes, then they'll be able to kind of articulate what's going on. And then that's when you can really help intervene.
So safe space and time to like decompress. So I teach older students. So my room is next to a little hallway where I could just peek out and see them walk up and down. But I guess if someone had students that were younger, maybe make an area in the classroom and name it like, I don't know, maybe the calming area or something special, right?
Something,
Where they can know that they can go there to recharge and decompress.
Yeah.
I like that. I like that. That would be excellent if all classes had that. So we're going to keep moving along because you just have a plethora of knowledge that I just want to dig into. So something else you had mentioned during our PD was burnout. How and why does that happen? And are we, you know, we live in a very fast-paced life. It's like go, go, go. We're all doing multiple things, taking care of friends and family. Is it something that we can just prevent all on our end?
Ooh, tough question. You know, it comes down to a couple of things, actually a few things. So when I did a kind of a deeper dive in this and I was looking at the literature, what kind of came out to was what people really need is, so what we found to be really important was our ability to be or feel autonomous, our ability to feel competent, and our ability to feel as though we are able to relate. And so what it came down to, which actually makes a lot of sense, is that if, for example, you're in your job, you want to be able to have this sense of perceived control, using psych words, internal locus of control. But you want to be able to feel as though you can make decisions and be able to do things because it's the right thing to do. So it's the ability to feel autonomous. The competence is really, it's you want to make sure that you understand what you're doing, the content of your job. And I think the last one is one that's super critical, which is relatedness. So the way that I kind of phrase that is you want to build, you know, good social connections within your environment. So at work, as well as within your teams, within your family, within your friends. But ultimately, all humans require social connections and positive social connections. So what's really interesting about that piece in general is that there's a kind of a lot of literature that kind of says like the numbers will vary, but the concept is good, which is where our personality and how we view the world is really such that we're the mean of the five closest people to us.
So, oh, wow.
So, you know, think about who do you hang out with the most? Who do you talk with the most? And what you're going to find is that your personality and your perceptions begin to sound very similar to those people that you tend to interact
that
with.
That is very true.
And so if you're around a lot of negative people, then you're going to realize that all of a sudden you have negative perceptions. You know, it's interesting how that works. Or if you have very optimistic people or very entrepreneurial people in your life, then you'll find that you're starting to become more creative, innovative. Your perspectives are changed. It's more positive, more optimistic. And so that piece becomes really important. So those really are the three key components. And if that is done, then a lot of times we feel connected to our job. We feel connected to the people.
I see.
So that really does help in regards
to burnout. Almost like raises your purpose in a sense. That's so, you know, when people say like, you're killing my vibe, like, so that's what that probably that's comes from, yeah. Right? And then I've also heard too, you probably know more about this than I do. Humans emit like electromagnet or like some type of waves. And so I've heard something similar. I just haven't heard that it was like the five people, but kind of like whoever you're around, like you're kind of like if someone's sad or upset, you're going to feel sad or upset for them, right?
Yes.
So, yeah.
So, yeah, we all have empathy. We have something called mirror neurons. And there's,
oh, wow.
So basically within our biology, we strive to connect with other people. And in a way, that's an evolutionary concept because people survive by being in groups.
So oh, tribes.
It's yes. Tribes, yes. And that's the reason why the two greatest things that kind of really hurt us is shame and vulnerability.
Oh, wow.
And so when you look at something like shame, you know, shame actually is the fear of not fitting in or not being included.
So true.
Mm-hmm. So we find that we tend to shift our behavior and we so desperately try and protect ourselves from shame. And vulnerabilities is really just that because we feel as though we're not enough or we have these weaknesses that we don't want anyone to see.
Mm-hmm.
And we try so hard to protect those from anyone being able to reach them. And that can alter and promote actually cynicism, which eventually leads to hopelessness, which leads to burnout. And I think that's the scary part.
I see. Wow. That's great knowledge. I want to go into mind wandering. If you can give us a definition of mind wandering and then how us as educators and parents can help encourage that more. Because I'm sure the opposite of mind wandering is being on a device all the time.
So mind wandering, a lot of people just call it daydreaming, but it's just okay. our ability to allow our mind to kind of venture off. And I think, we'll start with the good.
Okay.
Mind wandering is great because what it does is it stimulates the neural pathways in your brain that really promote creativeness and innovation.
Okay. Right?
So that's when we solve all our problems. You'll find is that when our minds begin to kind of daydream or mind wander, then we're able to kind of venture into the future or venture into the past, and we're able to look at possible challenges.
Interesting.
Or things that didn't go right, and we find solutions. So that's when we do our best. And mind wandering typically occurs when we're doing kind of mundane tasks, like, you know, walking, working in the yard, doing pulling weeds, washing dishes, taking a shower.
Folding laundry.
The one that no one ever admits to and never wants to say, but it's when we're on the toilet. But that's when our mind is able to kind of venture. And
interesting.
I think one of the challenges that I've seen is when you go to the mall, for example, and you look in strollers, you know, and you see these little children with screens in front of them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a challenge because if you're of kind of an older generation, then you didn't have that growing up.
Right.
And you had to play with things like toys. And
yes.
The beauty of toys and things and just toys or just finding things around the house and playing with is that we had to create those worlds and we had to be innovative and we had to be creative. And that built those neurons or those pathways in our brain.
I see.
Which then promotes our ability to be creative and innovative as an adult. And because we're building those skills.
Kind of like building the tracks, the pathways. Yeah. Okay.
And so I think what we're seeing now is that children don't know how to be bored. And so they're constantly being stimulated.
I agree.
And that actually is a bad thing because what we're seeing now is shorter attention spans.
Mm-hmm.
Social skills are struggling a little bit more.
For sure.
And a lot of people are experiencing what we kind of term as dopamine addiction, which is,
oh, wow.
We need to always kind of feel good. And it doesn't have to be a big feel good, but it's just these little spikes that we get when we get a like on, you know, Facebook or Instagram you know, things like that. And so what we're finding right now is that when you look at writing, for example,
since
you're an English teacher, you might acknowledge this or tell me if I'm right or wrong. So fact checking, is that children are now having a more difficult time with creative writing.
They are.
And so if it's just a regurgitation of something, then they're fine with that because that's what they do. They do that with Google. They do that with AI. They do that with a lot of things.
Yes.
But how do you apply it? how do you create something, how do you be more creative and innovative, is struggling now. And I think a lot of it is because when you're always on a screen, it's everything is kind of made for you. So you're watching a movie, which the storyline is
already curated for you.
Yes. Even video games, you'll find that kids are good at video games, you know, because they understand the algorithm of the game. So what they're doing is they're figuring out the that thing. You know, they're not being creative, innovative. They're just following, you know, the script. And so what we're not promoting is that being creative, innovative, thinking out of the box type of mentality.
Exactly.
You know, what we're creating is basically is children that, ironically, that follow rules, but they have shorter attention spans, so they don't always follow rules. So it's kind of this weird dilemma. But I think going, you know, kind of back to the brain thing, one of the challenges that we have is that, again, our brain is not that smart to know what is real and what is imagined. And mind wandering can get dangerous in a sense that if we spend too much time in the future or spend too much time in the past, and we begin ruminating over things that we actually don't have control over, then that causes us immense amounts of stress, because we begin to feel what it would feel like being in that situation.
So it's almost like you go back to that anxiety state of mind.
So, you know, like, for example, you could be sitting in your office right now in air conditioning and no one's around you, so it's perfectly safe. It's a nice, calm environment. And if your mind starts wandering too much and you start worrying about all your deadlines, all your chores you have to do when you get home, all these things, then you're no longer safe in your comfortable office. What it is now is you're now that situation, feeling the stress. And that's how people can get things like panic attacks and things at work when nothing is really happening at that time. But it's because your mind isn't here, it's there.
It's somewhere else, yeah.
And depression works the same way. It's when you go too far into the past, and that's really the worst, because there's regret and all that kicks in. But when we look at our memories and we try and wish that we could fix things, we know that we can't change our past. So if we don't allow ourselves to accept what has happened and move forward from there, then we tend to ruminate. That can lead to something called learned helplessness, which eventually can lead to, you know, more depressive symptoms. And so mindfulness becomes key, because we can't spend too much time in the future and in the past. And so we have to bring ourselves back into the present. And when we do that, then we feel safe again, then we feel in control, and our stress, anxiety, and depressive symptoms begin to decrease.
So finding that balance when you're in the mind wandering state, present. Do you know what I've done lately? I printed a little Honu, a little turtle, mindfulness coloring sheet, and it's like, you know, has little mandalas in it and everything. And I told my students, you know, if you come in early, because sometimes they come in like 3 minutes early, I'm taking attendance, and you want to color this just, you know, to relax before we get started, go ahead. And I really didn't think anyone was going to go grab them. Almost the whole class ran up to get the coloring page, and just to see them like relaxed. And it was almost like, instead of being in a room with like seniors and juniors, like being in a room with this innocence of like kindergarten, you know, like just the relaxation, and they just looked like they were content. So that, I was really shocked.
Yeah, so that works really well. That's actually one of the techniques that you can get grounded or practice mindfulness is those adult, basically adult coloring books.
Yes, yes.
But I, honestly, it's like the worst thing you can ever do for stress and depression is go on social media, because it's a lot of it is you're always trying to, or one of the biggest problems with social media, so by coloring and doing mindfulness activities helps to prevent, is that when you're on social media, a lot of times you're always comparing yourself to other people.
Right.
And really, honestly, the only person you should ever compare yourself to is your version of yourself in the past.
I like that.
And so if you compare yourself to how you were 1 week ago, then a lot of times then you can actually see progress, and you can see how well you're doing or what needs to happen. But if you compare yourself to other people, it gets really dangerous, because you don't really know the context of what they're doing. Yeah. So it's really an apples to oranges comparison.
Right. And I don't, and I think that children, teenagers, they don't realize that that's like a snippet of someone's life, or maybe even some type of acted or played out version of someone's life that, you know, doesn't even represent what's fully going on. And it's just, yeah, there's so much negativity that can come out of that.
Yeah.
So I really love that when you presented to us, you talked about being soul focused. And, you know, you're a science guy, and to hear you talk about being soul focused was very, like, uplifting, and it was very encouraging. Can you tell us what being soul focused is?
So soul focused is a concept that I recently learned about. And what was really interesting about that was it aligned really well with a lot of the whole concept of service. And so when someone, so there's two things that can happen, and this is related to burnout or wellness, is either being ego-focused or being soul-focused. Mm-hmm. And what soul-focused is focusing on kind of like a higher purpose or focusing on other people for the betterment of whatever situation that you're currently in.
Okay.
So being soul-focused means is how are we grateful for what we have, and also what can we do to contribute to help others, you know, promote their gifts and talents within our organization. And
I
so
love that.
It's really about kind of, if you're looking at it from an athletics perspective, it's really a team first perspective, that how are you, what are you doing to better the team itself or better your organization, better your school, and not so much worried about personal survival. And so what we found is that when you are ego-focused, and what that means is when you're worried about getting recognized, getting the promotion, getting the raise, making sure people know that you're doing everything for the organization, then what ends up happening is that it takes up so much effort, because what you're actually doing is trying to predict what other people want versus just kind of hopefully just kind of working towards the betterment of the organization itself.
Interesting, yeah.
So when people are trying to survive in their jobs, you'll find that they're always tired, that they have no energy, that eventually their efficiency begins to drop. They just have kind of a negative attitude toward things. And it's because we're trying to predict what others want, and we don't know what that really is. And
right. I think
that leads to frustration, and eventually that leads to
burnout. Exactly, right, yes.
So what's amazing is we found that, or what I've seen, is that when people are kind of doing things for the good reasons, for it's based on their value, how they find purpose, for the higher, just doing things to help other people become better, the awards and the recognition and all that comes naturally without even knowing.
I see.
And
I see.
So by helping others and by promoting your organization, by feeling and contributing to kind of a higher purpose, then things that would normally be ego-focused actually just comes naturally without effort. And
interesting, yeah.
One of the, I think, fascinating things was, you know, I was doing research on depression. I was trying to figure out, right, like, how can you treat depression without medication?
Mm-hmm.
And one of the techniques that I found was, be kind and do things for others. And it's because it makes
to help
you,
with depression.
Yes, because it actually, it's hard, because you actually have to exert energy in, or being
that
able to
true.
Actually move and do something.
That's true.
And when you're in deep depression, that's really hard. But
oh my goodness. Uh-huh.
When you kind of can begin to kind of feel that cynicism kick in, or that junk feelings that you may get, one of the things that really helps, again, is like helping someone else. So just by doing something as small as opening a door, or by helping somebody find something, or helping them with a project, or anything to do for somebody else, then you get that positive energy back that you just
that
feel.
So true.
And they'll express gratitude to you, and that makes you begin to feel better.
I see.
And so it really does help you by doing things for others. So when I was looking at what helps with things like depression or just improving mental health, you know, there's five things that I found that really helps. And the first one is social connectedness or social connection. So that's always the key, is being connected and being a part or being with other people.
Mm-hmm.
Making sure that what you do has purpose, or you feel as though it's purposeful. It's also really about aligning your behaviors to your values. And we found that was really important.
That's a good one.
Yeah, because if you don't, if your behaviors don't align with your values, then you feel really junk. So you might get this immediate satisfaction, but then there's something that just kind of eats away at you and it just doesn't feel right. And we found that.
Okay.
If you have any trauma experiences, then that should really be kind of addressed, just because a lot of that can stop you from moving forward in life.
Of course, of course.
And then the last one is connect with nature. And
yes.
You know, the sun is amazing. Being able to feel the energy from the ground. So walk around on grass, bare feet, go in the sand, but feel the sun. Just from a science perspective, is vitamin D actually reduces your cortisol levels, which means you get less stress. And that's the reason why a lot of times just walking in nature makes us just feel good. So that's just some
practices. Those are so powerful and they're so simple and I guess overlooked, right? Yeah. Going back on the positive energy, you said to be of service of people. So yesterday, for some reason, I don't know why, you know, I was going down under the bridge there to Harding to get to Kapahulu. And, you know, there's usually some homeless people there. And for some reason, I saw this little auntie and I felt compelled to give her this bag of cookies that I bought earlier. And I normally don't because I get a little hesitant, you know, I have my kids with me, but I just felt compelled to give it to her. So I rolled down the window, I gave it to her and she gave me the biggest smile and I just felt like so warm inside. And it was like, it was better than anything I did at work, you know, anything better than I did for my kids that day. It was just like, you're right. It's just something good. And then she waved to me and smiled and it's just this good energy. So I can see how that can really be uplifting to someone who really needs it.
Yes, I agree.
So that's great. So we have, and then the one thing I wanted to mention too, you said your number one on the list for better mental health was connection. So a few episodes ago, we talked about the Grant study from Harvard. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you've heard of it, right? I think it's like 83-year study where they followed men of different demographics, cultures, and backgrounds. And they followed them through college, through marriages, through children, now grandchildren. And they all said, like, the key to happiness and a successful life was personal connection. Mm-hmm. So, again, you're just reinforcing that. So, I mean, I think, yeah, that's what makes us separate as a species, right, is we have this ability to connect to each other. It's just... in a world of technology, it's almost that's technology that's supposed to be connecting us. It almost tears us apart in a way, right? All right, let's see. I have a couple more questions for you. I want to get into some personal questions, if you don't mind. So you spoke to us about pausing to help with anxiety. So I want to know, how do you pause when you feel anxious or a little overwhelmed? Like, what is your go-to strategy?
Close my office door, turn on music. And sometimes either just close my eyes and take 10 deep breaths, or I am privileged and happy that I have an office that overlooks Diamond Head.
Oh, wow.
So sometimes I'll just shut down everything, kind of lean back on my chair and just kind of allow myself to just look out in nature and kind of look at the ocean. I love that.
So it's creating your own safe space, so to speak. Wow, that's great. Music, I didn't think about music. So is it like a calming music or music you like?
For me, it's usually, I'll go with, calming, something a little bit more kind of mellow and slower.
Okay.
Sometimes when I don't need that extreme and I just kind of need to just get into a good space, then I'll listen to more classical.
Okay.
Something without words, because words thing gets me confused.
Okay.
But yeah, so I've used music a lot in order to kind of change my mental state.
Yeah, you know, speaking of music, so my kids and I, a few nights ago, you know, the weekdays are hectic with kids. You're running around from work, activities, picking them up. And we like to dance. And for some reason, we just went on YouTube and started playing it's called the happy song playlist. And so all those songs come up and we danced it out for 30 minutes straight. I mean, we were sweating because it's been hot lately. And yeah, music, it really just changes the feel and the vibe of an atmosphere. And I think with movement too, that kind of helps. So I don't know, I guess some people can use the stillness and then some people could also use the movement. I think you're right. It depends what you need at the moment, right?
So I think our world has gone to such a fast-paced environment. Like, this is, like, everyone's really stressed out, so that's mm-hmm. just true. I mean, but the one thing that I think is important to kind of reflect on or to kind of, you know, be aware of is kind of the beauty around us.
I love that.
So that's where, like, the humanities come in, and okay. that's, like, finding that great book or music mm-hmm. or... Mm-hmm. going to a play or doing something that really kind of connects us back to the arts really begins to kind of ground us back as why
we're humans. Because it circles back to creativity, yeah. right? I love that.
So that's something that I also try and promote as well, because it works. And sometimes we get so caught up in our day-to-day that we stop looking at what's beautiful around us.
I love that. There's so many, like, words you're saying. I want to just put them up on my wall. It's beautiful. Another question for you, Doctor. How do you show aloha? Because here in Aloha Mind, we want to connect aloha and mindfulness. So how do you show aloha in your community at Chaminade, or, you know, where you live, or within your family community or friendship communities?
For me, it's, I think, through service.
Okay.
So it's providing support to students who need help. It's providing mm-hmm. support to my colleagues, faculty, and my staff. Even with family, it's just to be present. So it's being able to kind of also give time.
I love that. Give time. Yeah, that's what we all need, is time with each other. This question I have for you, what have you learned in this field of behavioral sciences, brain anatomy, pausing, all this stuff? What do you feel K through, you know, college should be like taught in schools to help our kids, because they are really struggling right now, all ages? It's alarming.
So I actually really wish we could teach life skills. And what I mean by that is at the younger age, being able to help them understand what emotions are or what they're feeling. So a lot of the social emotional curriculum, I think, is great. Kind of reducing the stigma of that. You know, one of the challenges is that when we look at, you know, going back to biology, is when the flight or fight system kicks in for biological females, then mm-hmm. they release something called oxytocin, which is, we know it as the cuddle chemical.
Oh, okay.
And so that's why a lot of times when biological females begin to get stressed out, they tend to reach out more. So not all, but a lot.
Okay.
Men don't. And so men actually, what we find is they'll isolate. And so,
oh, wow.
I think you'll know when a man is heavily stressed, because their response would be something like, you know, don't worry about it, I got it, I'll take care of it. Mm-hmm. And then they'll isolate. Even if they have no idea what they're doing, they'll say that, and then they'll try and problem solve themselves.
Okay.
And so helping children learn to reach out to others, to communicate, how to appropriately communicate. Again, everything within social emotional skills, I think it's important. When they get older, like in high school, believe it or not, I think some schools are now adding this to the curriculum, but we need to teach them things like just simple things like personal finance.
That is true.
What is credit? You know, all this kind of stuff. Right. Because those are all like life skills that are going to hit them really hard once they go into college. And so it's more practical skills. And really, it's because they'll feel more competent. They'll feel better
purpose
about themselves.
All the things we discussed earlier, you're so right.
So I think social-emotional skills and building that kind of community within your school is really important in the beginning.
Okay.
Hopefully that kind of, and really that curriculum should actually stay at some point through, it doesn't have to be a course, but it can be through activities done in school.
I see. Things,
kind of culture.
Okay.
And I think that if we help students learn that it's, this is going to sound really bad, but it's not always about them, and to kind of focus on
that is true.
The bigger things and the higher purposes of things and how to help others and build community.
Go back to service, like you said.
Back to service, mm-hmm. then I think that helps them kind of get a different perspective and be able to help them see the different contexts of people, because we don't know people's backstories, and everyone has a backstory.
Exactly. So. I really like that. Yeah, that would be great if we can, you know, get that going one day. So we're coming around to close, and I have some rapid response questions for you. And it's, you know, themed around self-love, because part of mindfulness and being in a good headspace, best brain, best life, is self-love. And I'm trying to teach my students that. I'll say, what three things do you love about yourself? And doctor, it's really shocking that some kids write one thing or some kids don't write anything. And it's like, we have to promote that, you know. And I know sometimes if I think about, like, what would I write about myself? It is hard. Mm-hmm. So we want to promote that here. So I want to know, what do you love about yourself?
That is a hard question. let's see. I like the fact that I have like a systemic brain. So I'm able to kind of see things from different perspectives.
Okay.
I'm able to break down things into kind of manageable pieces, which has helped me at work. I think like myself better now because I'm beginning to really focus more on service and more on that part of life.
That makes sense with everything you've been saying. Great. What compliment would you give to your 12-year-old self, going back in the past and now all this wisdom and experiences you've had? What would you say if you had a chance to meet your 12-year-old self? What compliment would you give?
That you're able to learn how to learn, that you're able to be flexible, and that to just be patient, because it's amazing what opportunities will come when you least expect it.
I like that. Yeah, being patient, flexible is huge. And my last rapid response, you're going to fill in the blank. Happiness is anything you want. It can be humorous or it can be serious.
Happiness really is about appreciating and acknowledging the joys in my life. So it's really looking at, kind of going back to what I was saying, is really happiness is the small things. It's acknowledging kind of like the beauty around when things are going well. And it's really about focusing on when things are just working well.
I love that. Yeah. Just taking the time.
It's all about peace.
I love that. That's great. So where can we learn more about you, or if someone, you know, I don't know if you have like an email you want to share, but if someone says, hey, you know, I'd like to meet with you, or, you know, I'd like to, you know, collaborate with you, how can they reach you? Or do you have social media handle?
So the easiest, I think, is if you just email me. So that's my first initial last name. So diwamoto@shamana.edu.
Okay.
I have a LinkedIn. But I think email probably would work best.
Okay. Yeah, we can get that up for the audience once we release the episode. So thanks for sharing that. So, Dr. Yamoto, we usually like to, my partner and I, Don, will usually say, so what? Now what? We usually like to pose our audience with some type of mindfulness challenge. Is there a challenge you can give our audience today?
Let's see. I have a couple.
Okay.
First one is, can you think of three things that you're grateful for as soon as you wake up in the morning?
Oh, wow. That is a challenge.
You can do even three things that you're grateful for from the day before you fall asleep.
Okay.
Another challenge is don't go on your phone until you finish your morning routine.
Wow. Okay.
And if you take 10 deep breaths, so that your belly button goes up and down and not your chest before you fall asleep.
Oh, okay.
That would be a great one because that'll help you relax.
Okay.
And if you can just move around 3 to 4 times a week. So
that's doable.
Small walk. Nothing where, you know, it makes you feel like you're totally out of breath, but just moving.
Okay.
Those are all things that will kind of help promote mental health.
All right, audience, you heard it. That's your challenge. You got a couple. You got a lot of homework. And I'm going to have to get you back on here to check in on them and have some accountability here. But Dr. Yamoto, mahalo again for coming. We appreciate you. And audience, I hope that you learned more. I know that he has a plethora of knowledge that I could sit here and talk to him for days. But thank you so much for coming. And aloha, audience, and mahalo. And we'll see you next time. Aloha.